Morning, everybody. Can you hear me? All right. Pete Rizzo, editor of Bitcoin Magazine, editor-at-large of the Kraken Cryptocurrency Exchange, and Bitcoin historian on X now, if you follow me. Welcome to the ossification debate. Does Bitcoin need to change? Of course, we've got Mr. Jameson Lopp up here who just gave a fantastic overview of ossification, and Muneeb Ali, CEO of Trust Machines. All right. Show of hands. We just heard a little bit about ossification. Who in this audience believes that ossifying Bitcoin should be a goal? Show of hands. We should want to ossify Bitcoin and prevent changes to it. Show of hands.
Don't be afraid.
Wiggle around. All right,
Johnny!
We got one lone hand there. Okay, who thinks that ossifying the Bitcoin protocol is a concern? Show of hands. Okay, well, that's a great, thank you from the audience. Okay, so we're gonna define ossification, maybe state the positions on the panel. So I guess without further ado, what is ossification? Are you for it or against it, and why? Let's go with Jameson.
Yeah, I mean, ossification basically means, you know, no longer changing the protocol. You know, I think it really comes from like almost calcification of bones, if you will. You know, the idea that, in order for the network to continue working and people to be able to rely upon it, then it needs to remain, you know, stable rather than in flux.
Maybe I'm making an assumption, but it sounds like from your presentation, you are against ossification.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Bitcoin at a protocol level should be conservative. Mm. But as I said, there are risks if you can't respond to changes in the environment.
Well, we'll dig into all the nitty-gritty on why the pro-ossification movement might have something to say. Muneeb, are you for ossification? What does it mean to you, and why?
Yeah, I think the way I think about this is that being for or against ossification really depends on the definition of ossification you're using. And in my mind, when people talk about ossification, I look at it as a trend. Mm-hmm. That is Bitcoin trending towards becoming more stable and hard to change over time?
Because you did say in your presentation, I mean, durability is a feature that we want.
Exactly. Or is it becoming more experimental? I definitely don't want Bitcoin L1 to become more experimental over time. I want it to become more durable over time. And I would say trend towards ossification. Mm. And I think the second part of it is the ossification debate really forces interesting discussions. Mm. That if you want to trend towards ossification, I'm not saying that, hey, we could do this today or tomorrow or maybe even 5 years from now or 10 years from now. Then it forces a discussion that what sort of properties do you want from the L1? Mm. And so that most things can happen on the L2. Mm. And I think that's a very interesting debate to have, right?
I want to see if those hands are working. We had a minimal show of hands earlier. So talking a little bit about participation in network consensus, how many people here run a node? You have a computer or a device that stores the Bitcoin blockchain at home. Come on, everybody. We should see a full room here. All right, a few. How many people have actually participated in Bitcoin consensus? You've run software with a proposed change. You've signaled for a software with a proposed change. Show of hands, you participated in Bitcoin governance. We got one in the back. All right. So pretty minimal participation here, which I think highlights some of the issues. So barreling into that question, I think we've seen a lot of innovation on Bitcoin this year, right? We've seen the ordinals protocols bring, you know, something I think that is technically better than an NFT to the network. We've seen BRC20s, we've seen BitVM. All of this is happening without lower level changes to the protocol. Why are we upset with the status quo if the status quo is giving us so much to work with, Jameson?
Well, I mean, some people would actually say that the, you know, Taproot and TapScript changes of a couple of years ago created this unintended consequence of inscriptions and related ordinals technology. So, as I said, you know, there are always unknown unknowns, and you can't necessarily know, you know, what the entire breadth of functionality and how it will be used if you're just, you know, creating primitives that people, you know, can build on top of. I think you could argue that people could do an inscription without Taproot. It just made it easier. Mm-hmm. But as we keep going forward, we need to look at the ecosystem as total scope, like from developers, of how limited are people in what they can do? Like, do we want developers to have a wider variety of things they can do, or are we going to say, okay, Bitcoin is only money, and you can only store it and transfer it. You can't do more complex type of scripting functionality. So there are, I think, there's conflicting perspectives, and perhaps it's because I'm technical and I'm a developer, and I've always seen Bitcoin as a programmable database with all of these other interesting properties. Whereas a lot of people may say, oh, this it's only digital gold, and you should just keep it in cold storage unless you really need it.
So it sounds like you're saying that ossification, this attitude that we have, is actually, it was our unwillingness to ossify Bitcoin that created this explosion of interest and new protocols. Muneeb, your take?
Yep. I think it's great that there is Ordinals now, BitVM, and these projects are great, but I would say that they're happening in spite of the quite hostile conditions for developers that currently exist. Because I think Jameson had a great chart, right? Like, you look at the number of developers, pretty stable, not growing that much, but also not disappearing. I would call these as like diehard Bitcoin believers, and who are working with like very low level primitives and doing extremely hard work, right? Like, they deserve credit for actually being able to do that. But it is not a very developer friendly ecosystem right now. Right, so if you introduce, and this can only happen on L2s, you introduce like more high-level languages, easier developer environments. This is some of the work that we do with ClarityVM or with Rootstock. You have EVM compatibility, and I think these things appeal to a much broader set of developers, and I think that can be really good for the Bitcoin economy. If all of those developers start using BTC as an asset on an L2, I think that could be really good for Bitcoin. So we shouldn't look at like, hey, look, BitVM happened. That means that developers can do this. It just means a very, very tiny portion of developers can do it.
That was my next question, right? We've seen BitVM this week. I'm not sure if people are familiar with the proposal. Could bring smart contract functionality to Bitcoin, or it might be more apt to say it discovered that it was already there. So you could make the argument that maybe 10 years ago we could have made it easier for smart contracts to happen, and then we would have never discovered that this was possible, right? It really is when Robin Linus put out this proposal, he discovered something that generations of people who launched other cryptocurrencies didn't discover. Does not ossification encourage that? And then if you block that pathway, what will you lose, Jameson?
Yeah, I mean, on one hand, there's kind of the time preference argument of it may be a sort of non-falsifiable statement. Some people will say, oh, you can do anything you want on Bitcoin if you try hard enough. But the kind of the flip side of that is, who is going to try hard enough, right? If it's really, really, really hard, it may only be...
I mean, we have seen people this year. They did. Casey Rotemer tried hard enough. Robin Linus tried hard enough.
Yeah. So then, the question is, what would the world have been like if it wasn't that difficult? It's very hard to say.
Don't we know, isn't that the cryptocurrency ecosystem? Is that world? No, Muneeb?
Yeah.
No, I think the BitVM thing, I wrote some analysis about it as well. I think there are many things to be extremely excited about for BitVM. Like, for example, personally, the thing that I'm most excited about is that it can actually lower the trust assumptions for moving BTC between L1 and L2. I think that's huge. But I would want to make it very, very clear that these are not what you call full smart contracts or full VM, right? This is something different. It's more similar to DLCs, and having basically advanced capability to prove something between multiple parties versus the type of contracts that people are used to on Ethereum or Solana.
But we don't know whether people will build on that and achieve even more.
We know that if there are two ends of the spectrum, they're starting on this end of the spectrum, and we are talking about people who are already operating on this end of the spectrum. So these are very different things, and I want to be careful about it because people confuse. They confused Taproot with smart contracts. This was just a year ago,
sure.
Right? There were headlines that smart contracts are coming to Bitcoin. No, these are not.
It was the same scripting language as ever. It was just constructed
exactly
differently.
I don't want to make the same mistake with BitVM again, right? Like that's why I was pretty vocal about it, that, hey, these are not what most developers would consider full smart contracts.
Well, let's dive into the activation process. I think when most Bitcoiners say they're pro-ossification, really what they're saying is our activation process is a mess. Partly that's by design. You have the UASFs, the MASFs, URSFs. Some of this hasn't been tested. Some of it has. So I guess the question I would have to the panel is essentially, you know, if you're against ossification, are you pro some sort of regular, recurring, or standardized upgrade process? Yes or no, Jameson?
I think it's not feasible to ask for that. You know, unlike many other cryptocurrencies that have, you know, foundations and set standards and processes, Bitcoin is too diverse and too spread out to do that. You know, even the group of developers who may be working on a given proposal, or you know, different generation of developers than those before, it's kind of funny. Like you can look and point and say, oh, there's this Bitcoin improvement proposal process, but there is no one who can actually enforce the Bitcoin improvement proposal process.
Right, because the network needs to upgrade and activate it. Muneeb, you're
yeah. So I think the situation with Bitcoin is actually very interesting, right? The situation is that James is absolutely right that there is no really well-defined Bitcoin improvement process. It doesn't exist really. Like if you try to define it, like people would be like, oh, they're missing holes, right? Like some other networks.
Well, some people would argue that we shouldn't. It's actually a security vulnerability,
right?
And
yeah, who defines the process?
But then here's the interesting part. There's clearly something, because Bitcoin does upgrade. We did get SegWit, we did get Taproot. So the interesting reality right now is I do think that Bitcoin right now implicitly relies on a bunch of trusted individuals or parties.
Okay.
And once proposals are coming from those more trusted parties, the reaction that it's almost like circles, right? Like if the proposals are coming from the inner circle, like the outer circles respond better to them. They're not that hostile to those proposals.
But that inner circle is simply a meritocracy of people who...
It's reputation.
It's reputation, right? But so that's how it's actually working. And if a proposal, so what ends up happening
is... So what is wrong with the current process then?
I think what's wrong with the current process is that if you're not part of that group, you cannot really propose good ideas.
But can't anyone just earn themselves into that group through work?
I think it's a timing thing, right? Like if you were a Bitcoin developer in 2013, 2014, 2015, you have a lot more respect than someone who's trying to become a Bitcoin developer in 2022 or 2023.
It's a very challenging road because, as we said, even within the Bitcoin improvement proposal process, there is no best practice, much less anything written down, of how you go about garnering support.
Right.
You know, I would say the best way to describe it is, you know, it's the cypherpunk ethos of rough consensus.
Crypto-anarchy.
Yeah, it's crypto-anarchy, you know, rough consensus and running code. But in order to run the code, you have to get through the gauntlet of developers who believe that, you know, the code is worthwhile to actually merge into the implementations.
Right. Well, I want to go back to the one hand of the person who participated in consensus. Thank you again. So when you're looking at that and you're saying that we don't have a standardized process, we can't have a standardized process, how do we end up with anything other than what we have, which is essentially needing a bespoke activation method every time we'd like to make an upgrade, and then needing that consensus to be very difficult? Jameson?
I mean, I don't have a better proposal. I think this is just, you know, the
way.
Well,
then
way
where does
the
angst come from with the people who seem like they want to change how Bitcoin is working?
Yeah, so this is a very complex problem to talk about because there are many different attributes of Bitcoin that are essentially sacrosanct, you know, these inviolable properties of the network. And if you propose something that has, you know, even the smallest chance of weakening those properties, you're going to see massive pushback. But I think on the flip side, and perhaps what we don't talk about as much, are some of the less well-defined properties of, like, everybody talks about self-custody, running your own node, but how does that fit into scalability?
Multisig was enabled by an upgrade even, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, if we continue on the current path, and the protocol doesn't change to enable more scalability, how does Bitcoin onboard a billion users? How do we even have, you know, a billion UTXOs that people can self-custody? There's, I think, a lot of unanswered questions there.
Maneeb, same question to you. This bespoke process we have now, where does the angst come from if this is the only option?
I think the process right now is actually, I don't have anything glaring that I would want to fix with it, right? I think it's actually a pretty decent way, an open, transparent way as well. It's not like people are going in secret back doors and making any decisions, a very public sort of a thing, and it has community support. I think where my worry comes from is that I'm in the camp that Bitcoin basically needs a few very critical changes to the L1, mostly in the camp of, you know, supporting better L2s. Right? Either it's like ARP Stark Verify, ARP Snark Verify, or something different, like, you know, where you can verify an entire thing like a WASM computation. But if you get that, right, then I would start caring a lot less about how is Bitcoin upgrading, because you've basically implanted the biggest change that you need, which is much better support for L2s. And then most of the experimentation is happening on L2s after that.
Right. So we're talking a little bit about the bespokeness of the upgrade process. I want to talk about the participants. We've seen, as you mentioned, several upgrades over the years. Who should participate in the consensus? Are there groups that should not, maybe for-profit companies, certain types of entities? How would you look at the participants in consensus upgrades in Bitcoin?
Well, I think everyone who has the capability should participate.
But if we saw a company come out and advocate for a consensus change, you would argue that that would be a very negative thing for...
No, it depends on what the change is. But this is why it's so complicated, is because there's such a diverse group of participants, and we all have different things that we value and interest. So, you know, much like Muneeb, I think like some of the highest priority improvements should be around permissionless innovation, just allowing for more experimentation to happen so that we don't have to go through this rigmarole every couple of years. I'm a security professional, so I would also like to see the security improvements that I talked about. I'm also a cyberpunk, so I would like to see more privacy improvements. That's a particularly gnarly problem, because really strong privacy tends to harm the auditability, which is, you know, another one of those inviolable properties of the system.
Muneeb, how do you think about the participants in the consensus process?
I think it should be open to as many people as possible. So Bitcoin defaults to if there is very high level of consensus and support, only then a change will happen, right? So even small parties who can be very vocal, who can be very vocally against something, can actually stop something from happening, right? So as Bitcoin keeps growing, you can see the trend line, right? Like the more and more people get involved, it's like there will be more people who would be against whatever you're proposing, right? And if Bitcoin keeps going in that direction, that's why I think we have a sweet window of opportunity maybe in the next 5 to 7 years or something, where we should get enough of these changes in that are forward-looking, that enable future permissionless stuff. Like, for example, I don't see privacy happening like in terms of like fully encrypted transactions happening on L1, but we should absolutely have L2s that have that, right? And people who want to use that feature, move their BTC to an L2, they have their privacy there, and then they can come back for auditability at the base layer.
Running a bit low on time here, so want to move to the next question. How do we know that we won't destroy or harm Bitcoin? Of course, this is the allegation about some of the things the Taproot enabled with ordinals. We see the UTXO size increasing. We see the blockchain size increasing. People are concerned about that having a centralization effect. How do we know that we won't harm Bitcoin if we don't ossify?
Yeah, I mean, we can't. No. As I said, you know, well, as I said, one of my biggest worries is we ossify and we don't have the scalability and permissionless innovation. And actually, I worry that Bitcoin does go mainstream without these changes, because the only way that I see that happening is by basically a billion people ending up with their money in the hands of a dozen centralized gatekeepers. It's very similar to the email problem.
You think if we ossified today, that's more likely to happen?
Yes. So, you know, there are many things to worry about. But it's an interesting process of discovery. For example, you know, we had check template verify that Jeremy Rubin worked on for years and was pretty soundly rejected, but now
he's also
coming
proposing
back around.
A change to the activation process as well as a specific technical change to Bitcoin. So a little bit different there. Would you agree?
Yeah. So he gave up on that.
Right.
But now it's interesting because actually with OpVault, we're seeing people looking at OpVault in the context of check template verify and saying, oh, these two things are actually mutually compatible and can help make each other stronger.
So you're saying the initial negative reaction was positive?
It just goes to show how difficult it is to foresee how these things will interact with each other. This is a continual process of discovery. Now, I'm optimistic because this is a system that is widely distributed and many of us are paying attention to what is happening. So if something does break and there is general agreement that we have strayed off in the wrong direction, it's still possible to course correct.
Muneeb, how do we know we won't harm or destroy Bitcoin through this process?
I think Bitcoin is already sort of like, the culture is to be extra careful. Like if it's a spectrum, we're already leaning towards that. And I think the market forces would pull you more in that direction anyway as Bitcoin becomes more and more adopted. Like, if BlackRock is using it or other people, like people would want stability more and more. So I would say that right now, this year, seeing the revival of interest in developers, and Bitcoin certainly became relevant in the rest of the industry where the developers were, right? So this year would be probably the worst time to signal that, hey, we are going to ossify Bitcoin. Right? Like a lot of developers are getting interested. They're feeling that, hey, Bitcoin is open to change. New things are happening. So I think this year would probably be the worst time to signal that, hey, we are actually not going to change.
Well, that brings me to my last question. Isn't ossification an inevitability? And then how do you know when that line is or where it is, Jameson?
Yeah, I mean, we won't really know in hindsight. I think... we're seeing that the time period between making changes to the protocol is growing. And so, perhaps if we've gone for a decade, then most people will agree that there's no more changes that are likely going to happen. But once again, I worry we get to a point where 50 years from now, we do need to make a change in response to something, and there are literally no developers alive who have gone through that process.
Muneeb, question of is when will we know we've done it?
I think when basically... there are no more improvement proposals needed from the layer, right? Like, you look at TCP/IP. Like, it's like, I think some work happens there, but in decades, like, TCP/IP has not changed. Why? And I'm going to really sound like a broken record. Because they enabled other layers on top, right? Other layers on top were able to give the new features so that TCP/IP never had to change. So I think ossification, I don't think it's like something you can proactively drive towards. It's something you reach because people are no longer demanding features from that base layer anymore. And I think that can never happen without very thriving economy of like L2s and L3s and L4s on top.
We got a little bit of time left. Just want to run that show of hands again, get people up and ready. How many people now, after hearing everything you've heard, think that ossification is a concern? Show of hands here. Okay. How many people believe that ossification is a goal? We should keep Bitcoin the way it is. Or one guy. Thanks. All right. And how many people learned something about ossification or learned about the Bitcoin process? Okay, there we go. Maybe that's the best we can hope for.
Mission
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.